The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Film Show, where we come to praise Hollywood, not to burn it. It was Hollywood, after all, that served as the shy, retiring, behind-the-scenes hero during the Iranian hostage crisis of 1979, at least according to the new film from Ben Affleck. We're kind of taking him on trust. Spinning stories on this week's show. The agents of Alps play dead in a Greek ghost story with a difference. Fraternal ties get tested in the British drama My Brother the Devil. And the Sapphires sing songs of love to the embattled troops in Vietnam. But we start with Argo, Ben Affleck's extraordinary rendition of how the CIA worked with Hollywood to help spring six imperiled Americans from the inferno of revolutionary Tehran. We sent The Guardian's Catherine Shord down to get some answers from the film's director and star.
Aliens and robots?
Yes, sir.
You're telling me that there is a movie company in Hollywood right now that is funded by the CIA?
Yes, sir.
What's wrong with the bikes again?
We tried to get the message upstairs, sir.
You think this is more plausible than teachers?
Yes, we do. One, there are no more foreign teachers in Iran.
And we think everybody knows Hollywood people. And everybody knows they'd shoot in Stalingrad with Pol Pot directing if it would sell tickets.
One of the themes of Argo is about storytelling and how powerful it is, from political theater to the way we kind of communicate to our children to the way that we inspire people, you know. And it's interesting that Hollywood and, you know, the clandestine services are both spend most of their time convincing people that something that's not true is in fact true.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir. By far.
The United States government has just sanctioned your science fiction movie.
Thank you, sir.
Hollywood sort of develops this way of telling stories and oftentimes uses that in philanthropic causes or political causes, which people may or may not think are good. But, you know, there are really positive offshoots. Mostly, I think it's, you know, self-serving and kind of designed to be that way. But I think some good things also do happen. This is an exceptional example of something good happening. But yeah, it's possible.
How about the Horses of Achilles?
No good. Nobody does westerns anymore.
It's ancient Troy.
If it's got horses in it, it's a western.
Hey, Kenny, please? Yeah, it's John Chambers about the Office Space. It doesn't matter. It's a fake movie.
If I'm doing a fake movie, it's going to be a fake hit.
I think Alan Arkin said that it's not a spoof, it's not a satire, and people can get confused about that. What would you say it is?
He just gets cranky when he's asked that question. So he's like, no, it isn't a spoof! I would say that it's... I mean, that there's comic elements to it. I guess we're not satirizing Hollywood in the sense that we're like not holding specific things up for, you know, to be lampooned, but there is a way in which the movie sort of rolls its eyes a bit.
I got an idea.
They're a Canadian film crew for a science fiction movie.
I fly into Tehran. We all fly out together as a film crew.
Are there many actors in Hollywood who also moonlight as agents, do you think?
I think there are probably quite a few, yes. I think probably Hollywood is full of CIA agents, and we just don't know it. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to discover that, you know, this was extremely common.
Are you a CIA?
I am, yes. And now you've blown my cover, so there goes my career. I hope the directing thing better work out.
Joining me now is The Guardian film critic Peter Bradshaw and films editor Catherine Shord, who you got quite the scoop out of Ben Affleck there, didn't you, with the CIA revelation?
I do. I hope people are going to pick up on it pretty prompto, but they haven't yet. So, and I mean, actually, he's an amazingly sort of impressive and intimidating person in the flesh, I thought, because, you know, when you see Argo, it's sort of easy to kind of giggle at him a bit. He's got this amazingly gratuitous shirtless scene where this guy who's apparently very hard living and always guzzling booze and late nights is gym ripped. He's great, actually, and it made me sort of slightly... think even better of the film. I know there's been a bit of a backlash, but I think partly that backlash is because it's seen as this Oscar frontrunner, and so people are anticipating an amazing work. And in fact, it's sort of, when it's seen in that light, it's as cynical an Oscars push as The Artist might have been seen to, because
Hollywood is hero again.
Exactly.
Peter, did you find it fun? More than that, did you find it truthful? Do you think that it's played fast and loose a little?
I certainly found it fun.
any film or book or play based on the testimony of a spy, you have to take with a pinch of salt. So who knows if it's true or not? But it's certainly so crazy that it should be true. It certainly ought to be true because it's so brilliant, the idea that they have to fake up an entire film to get these six people out under the banner of the Canadian flag. I thought it was great fun. I really liked it when there appeared to be references both to the producers and to Wag the Dog. There's a scene where they're going through all these scripts, and I just think, my God, that has to be a reference to Leo Bloom and Max Bialystok, doesn't it? What disconcerted me about it was that it seemed to raise all sorts of wonderfully delicious aspects of cynicism and irony and satire and subversion, all of which have to be strongly cancelled at the end in the service of quite a schmaltzy patriotic ending. I wondered what it would look like if Aaron Sorkin had written the script. There are certain aspects of it which really do sound a bit Aaron Sorkin, certainly when they're saying, is this the best bad idea you've got? Yes, sir, this is the best bad idea on the table. Very Aaron Sorkin. And yet the end of it is Aaron Sorkin at his most serious and uncynical and quite solemn and pious.
I see this is being talked up as the front runner for next year's Best Picture Oscar. Is that the way you think it's going to go?
I'd be a bit surprised if it sort of, made good on that, actually. I mean, it was interesting at Toronto, where it premiered, where, it is a very kind of Hollywood is great and Canadians, hey, they're even better. And it got the second prize after Silver Linings Playbook with the audience vote, which is a sort of seen as a bit of an Oscar tip. I'd prefer it if it went that way round, Silver Linings, in. I don't know what it's like to get. I mean, it might get a few. Did you enjoy John Goodman, Sam? Were you a big fan?
I thought he was great in the film. Yeah. Less friendly
in the flesh, obviously.
But, he's the lucky talisman for these films because he was in The Artist playing another Hollywood mogul type in that.
Absolutely. He's golden.
I need you to help me make a fake movie.
So you want to come to Hollywood and act like a big shot without actually doing anything?
Yeah.
It'll fit right in.
We now move from Argo to a story of spooks of a rather different stripe. It's Alps from the Greek director Yorgos Lanthimos.
The end can be a new and often better beginning. That's the promise of the operatives of Alps, who hire themselves out as substitutes for the recently deceased. They're play-acting the roles of dead daughter, lover, spouse, and reenacting precious memories for the grieving relatives. It's droll, it's deadpan, it's as black as pitch. A Portrait of the Netherworld from Greek director Yorgos Lanthimos.
Εγώ δεν ξέρω.
Ούτε εγώ.
Τον Prince.
Ποιον?
Prince.
Δεν μπορείς να αντικαταστήσεις τον Πρινς.
Γιατί?
Ο Πρινς δεν έχει πεθάνει.
Έχει πεθάνει ο Πρινς.
Ο Πρινς ζει.
Συγγνώμη.
Peter, director Yorgos Lanthimos is kind of the laughing mortician of Greek culture, isn't he? He did Dogtooth, and now this is even weirder and wilder in a way.
I've got to say, I didn't find it weirder and wilder. I found it like Dogtooth, but about 30% as weird and wild, if I'm absolutely honest. I love Dogtooth, and I thought that Yorgos Lanthimos was an extraordinary figure who just sort of burst in on us. Dogtooth was his breakthrough rather than his debut, but... And he was the figurehead of basically a kind of new Greek wave with movies like Attenberg, in which he also acted. Yeah. And this has what I can already identify as almost his sort of mannerisms, kind of deadpan stuff, alienated, difficult sex, dysfunctional mannerisms in a dysfunctional universe. But I've got to confess that where in Dogtooth I found that absolutely compelling, I sort of suspected that in Alps he was coming up with the same ingredients and the same recipe, and I wondered how much it was sort of telling me, really. I think sometimes directors on the festival circuit slightly drink the Kool-Aid a bit. They start to realise what it is that's getting the reviews and they start reproducing it. And I wondered if he wasn't slightly doing that with Alps. That may just be me.
It's just you. I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
Did you? Okay.
I thought it was... First time I saw it, I thought it was a total black comedy. Second time I saw it as a tragedy. I think it's perfectly realised, and you're right. There's something self-regarding about it because they're playing roles, and it's about trying to find a role that fits. Right. And yeah. and replaying these precious moments and reading the lines, and I just thought it was okay. I thought it was superb, and it worked for me. But I agree that it's a very hard sell. It's not an yeah. easy film to sit through. Catherine, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I thought, you know, I can see that in a certain mood it would be comedy, and in a certain mood it would be tragedy. I kind of wanted it to be a bit funnier. It reminded me a lot of the Evelyn Moore book, The Loved Ones, about the, you know, the pet.
The business of
death. Right. You know. I kind of wanted it to be a bit more like that, but probably that's just an imposition onto it. I sort of know what you mean, Peter.
I just didn't have the software to run it. Maybe the software wasn't installed and I couldn't quite run it. What did you think of the gymnast scenes at the beginning and the end?
Well, the gymnast scenes did... I mean, there was so much about this film that completely mm. left me in the dark. Yeah. And I saw it in Venice last year and I went in right. not knowing anything about it. For the first half, you're thinking, mm. what on earth is going on? Why are mm. these people acting badly? And then it kind of, the penny drops. The gymnast scene was strange because... You're not sure whether that's supposed to be a happy ending or not. Or are they still acting a role? Or where does that sort of fit
See,
in?
See, for me too, I felt that it was a sort of mannerism. That he'd come in and say, with a hardcore, badass, you know, jarring mannerism to make us all wake up. There's something very nasty is going down. But I didn't quite get how it was meshing in with the rest of the movie, really. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's
See it again.
I think you've seen a lot of freaky stuff at the movies, Peter. Mm.
I didn't find myself jaded. I found myself slightly alienated in a way that I didn't expect to and shouldn't have done. So it's just me, I imagine.
Game.
Δεν μπορούσα να πω κάτι που έπρεπε.
Τι δεν μπορούσες να πεις?
Παππού κοιτά μια ωραία κούπα για να πίνεις τον καφέ σου ή το τσάι σου.
Και ο παππούς τι έκανε?
Στεναχωρήθηκε.
Και εσύ?
Εγώ τίποτα.
Let's leave the blank, forbidding landscapes of Alps behind us now for the ostensibly more comfortable landscape of East London and the film My Brother, the Devil.
Yo, who's here? Huh?
You said they teach you how to fox, man.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't remember that, though. When was that? When was that? I'll teach you right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna hit you in the body. In the body.
Boom! Sally El Husseini's debut feature alights in a hackneyed London gangland of estates, markets and bus shelters. And then finds a new route through familiar terrain. It's the tale of a gauche young pup who idolises his drug-dealing older brother, only to stumble upon a secret that shakes him to the core.
Be in maths, geography, A in English.
Bro, that's what I'm talking about, huh? Yo, Einstein. I got something for you.
What?
Yeah, you'll see.
Catherine, was this a new twist on old rope for you?
Yeah, it was a bit. I mean, not the biggest twist, but twisty enough to be raw and exciting to try and extend that.
Knotty.
Knotty. It wasn't that knotty, actually. It was a bit, could have done with a few more.
Taut, though.
Mm. Quite taut.
Could we push this metaphor right through the rest of the show?
Yeah, it skipped along. it was great. Really good. Sort of slightly took me by surprise. And this guy, James Floyd, who's the lead, and it partly, I think, works so well because he's brilliant and really compelling and it was great. The cinematography was great. It was all very fresh and exciting. Sort of did definitely rely on kind of time-honoured career thing, yeah. Younger brother. It might not go that well.
I do worry about like all the British film crews bumping into each other on the estates of East London.
Yeah, I mean, my heart has sank through quite a few urban dramas this year, but this was great. It was fresh. It had a kind of ingenuous energy, and the faces of the two leads were great. They were sort of looked great on camera. They were strong.
There's a chemistry between them as well.
Absolutely great, and it was kind of muscular and heartfelt. It wasn't perfect. I mean, you Catherine's right to say, you know, it doesn't avoid the cliches totally, but it kind of stays within the cliches, but gives them a lot of fizz. And all that stuff of one, your ends and everything like that, and you know your kind of turf war and gang culture, using a lot of non-professionals who again worked very well on camera. It had a real point. It had real energy. It was a very athletic movie. And considering it was nearly 2 hours, quite long for these two pretty untried faces, really very good. I mean, Sally El-Hosseini, who is apparently, I really knew nothing about her. She's worked with Paul Greengrass on the crew of his films. This is very impressive stuff as a debut film. Very, very good indeed, I think.
You don't need to worry about me. I'm good round here. People know who I am.
This is how it starts, bro.
Why not, bitch? I can't shake him off.
Know what you got to throw?
No, I'm not stupid, right? Don't knock me off!
Where you been, fam?
So you just leaving, don't tell man nothing, no?
Disrespect.
Is he linking another girl?
You're part of this, cuz. Drugs, money, guns.
I can't do this no more.
We've had crisis, death and criminality, so we're now desperately hoping for an uplifting end to this week's show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Sapphires.
Don't you know I sit around with my head hanging down and I wonder
The Sapphires are a struggling Aboriginal singing quartet who find a new lease of life, belting out soul classics to the predominantly African-American grunts over in Vietnam. Chris O'Dowd co-stars as our boozy master of ceremonies, squiring his songbirds through an era of carnage, civil rights and the Jackson Five.
We're the Sapphires.
Sapphires. We'll see you in Saigon.
Peter, if you were being blown to hell in Vietnam, would you want the Sapphires to sing for you?
Either that or Jimi Hendrix or somebody. Possibly more the Sapphires than Hendrix, in a way. I thought this was a very nice, feel-good movie. It first surfaced, I think, in Cannes, actually, this year. And I think possibly at that time or slightly later, it's caught the attention of Harvey Weinstein, who is now very much on board as a producer and is giving it a massive...
He's like the fifth Sapphire.
Yeah, he is like the fifth Sapphire. He's really giving it a massive shove. The great thing about this film, I think, is it really shows that, quite unexpectedly, Chris O'Dowd really does have the chops. Mm. He really is a sort of film star. I mean, you think, well, this guy who's a sort of small screen comedy player, surely he's not going to be able to carry it. Surely it was a bit of a fluke, this bridesmaid's business. But no, he's not Tom Cruise, but he can certainly look like a very credibly flawed sort of comedy romantic leading male. It's a very likable, puppyish kind of film with its heart in the right place. The only thing is that I think Chris O'Dowd has to fall in love with one of them, and that relationship seems a bit forced. I didn't quite believe in it. He has to do these big speeches, which sort of come out of nowhere and are at a night's move away from Chris O'Dowd's usual sort of shtick, his usual chaotic comedy shtick. He suddenly has to pull it together and be quite a heartfelt leading male. And it's not bad, but I didn't think it quite worked. But it's a nice little film. It's a nice little film.
I can see you girls singing in places like that. There and in the Rainbow, in the Olympia, the best rooms in the world.
I'll take you there.
Because you've got it within you, you just need to let it out.
I'll take you there.
That's it, let it out of you, like a geyser coming out of the ground, like a volcano springing from the earth, and you just can't stop it.
I'll take you there.
Like a volcano pushing through the earth beneath you.
I'll take you there.
Until finally it's easy enough, like breathing in and breathing out and breathing in and breathing out and breathing in and breathing out and breathing in. Oh, mercy. Oh, can I have some mercy now?
And that's it from this week's Guardian Film Show. My thanks, as ever, to Catherine Short and Peter Bradshaw, but also special thanks to the Sapphires for sending us out with such a flourish. See you next week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.